Chapter 8. Next bounty I take had better hope to all the old gods that they decide to hide out on a tropical beach planet. Django groans disgustedly, hauling himself out of the knee-deep mud and onto the dock. He turns and grabs John's arm, hauling him up after him, and John manages a sound of thanks, too breathless for much more. The log they manage to find, not nearly as whole and sturdy as the first, gives up entirely with a groaning schlorp as it vanishes beneath the surface of the swamp, overcome by mud, and John grimaces faintly, trying his best to shake out the hem of his cloak. "If it helps," he says, a little dry, "I think Dooku is on a semi-tropical planet right now." "All the more reason to go and put a blaster bolt through his skull," Django says grimly, but he pulls John's arm over his shoulder and wraps an arm around his waist and aims them in the direction of the Slave One as they stagger down the dock. "If that warworm decides to eat us right now, I'm going to carve it into steaks." "I think you have to get your hands down my pants before it will try." John can't help but smile at the dirty look Django slants him. And after a moment, Django huffs in reluctant amusement, tightens his grip, and holds him up as they step off the wooden deck and down onto stone. The port looks suspiciously quiet, and Django casts a wary eye over it, then sighs. "Those instincts of yours any good for telling if my son got himself eaten?" he asks. John hums lightly, eyes on the bend in the path where it cuts through a small stand of trees. "I think Han would save him," he says. Django's silence is highly skeptical, and John laughs a little, winded and a little punch drunk. The chrysalids are gone, though, beaten and no longer suffering, no longer putting anyone else in danger. There's a Sith in the universe, but he's been identified, and Django is going to help kill him. Django will have some kind of justice for Galadron, even if it will never be close to enough, and Django's grip on his side tightens as they drag themselves around the curve, and John closes his eyes, breathes out. That's a good thing, too. Ahead of them, there's a cry, then running steps. John raises his head just in time to take a prudent step sideways, step right out of Django's hold, half an instant before Boba barrels right into him. Django yelps, goes down with a curse, and lands on his ass in the gravel with a squish of mud, and John muffles his laughter, taking two steps back, turns, looking for Han, and smiles a little crookedly at the sight of him approaching much more carefully, one arm in a makeshift sling. "Han," he says, over the sound of Django dragging his son into a headlock, and Boba protesting viciously. When Han meets his eyes, a little wary, John inclines his head, and Han's relief rises sharply. He crosses the space between them, coming to a halt a few feet from John, and looks up at him. "You got hurt," he says accusingly. "Only temporarily," John says, and goes to one knee, offering a hand. "I can help with your shoulder, if you want. It will hurt a little, but then it will be fixed." "Boba reset it," Han says a little dubiously, but he slips closer, right under John's hand. When John curls his fingers over his shoulder, trying to feel the extent of the damage, Han pointedly looks away and says, "I saved him from getting eaten, and he didn't even say thank you." "You did," John breathes out, concentrates, and there's only a bit of swelling and some lingering strain to the joint, which is easy enough to heal with a touch of the Force. Han hisses and twitches back, but almost before John can open his mouth to apologize, Han is wriggling out of the sling and moving his arm, and his face lights up. "Yeah," he says, distracted by poking at the lack of bruising. "I said it didn't seem right, and he didn't listen because he wanted to explore. And then the Rancor tried to eat us, and I had to save Boba by throwing us out of the tree." John hums, flicking a glance at his face. He's going to have to test Han's midichlorian count at some point, because that sounds rather like he was sensing the chrysalids, even if he only has a touch of force sensitivity. It's enough to justify some form of training and control. Not anything close to real training. Nothing like what Dark Woman gave him, but enough to keep Han safe, no matter where he ends up. "Good instincts," is all he says, and Han rolls his eyes like that will hide the way he flushes. "Better than Boba's," he says derisively, deliberately pitched to Carrie. And, on cue, there's a sound of outrage as Boba fights his way out of Jango's grip. "I was trying to get my scanner to work," Boba protests. "The only reason you saw it first was because you were skulking about." Jango groans, snatching Boba around the waist and heaving him up over his shoulder as he rises. Boba goes with a yelp, kicking the whole way, but Jango just traps his legs with an arm and says, "A Mandalorian honors life debts, Boba." Boba makes a supremely grumpy sound, dangling upside down over Jango's shoulder. "I guess," he says, and then gives Han a narrow-eyed look. "Thanks for saving me. I guess it was kind of cool." John hides his smile as shock and then deep embarrassment flash through Han, coupled with a surge of flustered emotion that makes him jerk his head away and look elsewhere. "You're welcome," he says pointedly, and then tells John, "You smell like mud." "So do you," John says mildly, and Han rolls his eyes, clearly unimpressed by this line of reasoning. "Showers all around," Jango says, slanting a glance at John that's edged with something sharp, almost vulnerable, except for how it cuts both ways. "Then we're leaving this mud ball." John meets his eyes, doesn't make the offer to share the shower back in his room that he wants to make. They're both too tired, and getting off the moon to find Dooku is more pressing. He'll save it for another time, and hope there is another time. Jango's words make him think there will be. "I'll call my friend and get a location," he says, because Noel and Tay together will be able to keep Nico close enough to avoid disasters, at least until John can get there, particularly if Faye joins them. Jango nods, grim, satisfied, but when he reaches out, the hand he lays on John's back is light. His thumb brushes over one of the marks he left earlier, and John has to swallow hard and look away to keep from having a visible reaction. "Good," Jango says quietly. "Once Dooku is dead..." He doesn't have to spell it out. John knows the outline of Mandalorian honor and revenge, and just because Jango hasn't been walking around with his armor painted the traditional sandy gold doesn't mean he hasn't been looking for revenge. It's not the Jedi way, but John can understand the need for it. "You should go back," he says quietly, and Jango's mouth twists. "We're gonna have to," Boba says, and that grin is bright and delighted and wicked. "At least a Concord Dawn. Dad's gonna need room for 3 million sons." "What?" John says blankly. Right over top of him, Jango jerks, almost drops Boba, and swings him around to dump him on his feet. "What?" he says more loudly, and his expression is annoyance and something that's rapidly shading towards alarm. "Boba, I told you to drop it. They're clones commissioned by Tyrannius, not my sons." Boba beams. "They are," he retorts. "You said it too, Dad. Your sons listen when they're told to fall back and protect someone, right? All your sons. So that's me and Pons and all the other clones too." Jango is frozen stiff, looking like he doesn't know whether to grab Boba and throttle him or turn and run. And John raises both eyebrows, looking from Jango to Boba and back, and makes Boba grin at him, all teeth, and he grabs Han's wrist, hauling him forward. "We get the shower first," he says, and beats a hasty retreat for the Slave One, while Jango is still stock still with bone-deep shock. John watches them go, then slants a sideways glance at Django as he tugs his hood back. "Clones," he says. "For Dooku." Django opens his mouth, closes it, and doesn't answer. "A yes," John thinks, amused, and tips his head. "I assume," he says mildly, "that when you said sons, you meant Boba and Han." Django makes a pained sound, scrubbing a hand over his face. "But I didn't specify," he says, faintly muffled. "Mandalorian law." Boba saw a loophole and exploited it ruthlessly, John thinks, and puts a hand up to hide his smile with his tattered sleeve. Not fast enough, clearly, because Django makes a sound of deep annoyance and jabs him in the ribs. "Don't laugh," he tells John. "Boba's gonna get me registered as a father to more kids than live in all of Concordia. All he has to do is say I acknowledged them." "You did," John points out, even though he's very careful to hide his smile better this time. Django growls, grabbing him by the neck of his robes and shoving him back, right up against the closest tree. John doesn't even try to resist, laughing as Django pins him, as a calloused hand grips his jaw tightly, tips his head up. "You think this is funny, Jedi?" Django threatens, though all John can feel from him is prickly, annoyed resignation. "Some of them are infants. What the hell am I supposed to do with a few thousand infants?" John raises a brow at him, not even blinking when Django leans in, arm and iron bar across his chest. "Get a bigger ship," he suggests. And when Django makes a sound of fury, John leans forward and kisses him, light and lingering. "Or ask for help," he says more softly, and Django's breath shudders out of him. "They're not," Django starts, and then stops short, closing his eyes. His head is full of indistinct thoughts, impressions, feelings, but he keeps circling back to the true Mandalorians, and John lets out a quiet breath. He strokes Django's hair, then pulls him into another careful kiss. And this time, Django kisses back, on the verge of desperate. John gentles it, eases it back, doesn't let Django make this, at least, a fight, and feels the way Django shudders, fists tight in his cloak as Django presses closer, and John takes it, takes him. "There's no one left to ask," Django says, low and ragged, and John closes his eyes, frames his face with his hands, leans up, kissing Django's eyelids, his forehead. "I'm right here," he doesn't say, but from the way Django's arms wrap around him, almost bruising, he takes John's meaning well enough. "Thought you said you traveled too much to take care of a kid," Django says roughly, even as he rests their foreheads together. 3 million kids is different, though." "You need help," John says simply, hesitates, brushing his fingers over the tight curls of Django's short hair, and tries to put into words the forces that have guided his steps since he first learned to walk. He's never tried to explain it to someone not a Jedi before. "I go where the Force calls me. It called me here. It called me to you." "You don't know that," Django says, sharp. John snorts quietly. "I do, because I'm here," he counters, and feels Django's harsh breath, the way he leans in, puts all of his weight on John. John takes it, breathing him in, and says quietly, with a faint smile, "More time for your plans." Django scoffs but turns his head, slanting a kiss over John's mouth. "Better hope the first batch of clones are willing to play babysitter," he says roughly. "If they interrupt, I'm sending all of them back to Kamino." John doesn't believe him for an instant, but he doesn't say that, just hums, kissing back, and pulls away long enough to say, "I know three Jedi who might help." For a long moment, Jango doesn't say anything. Then, with a short breath, he pulls back. "We'll see," is his only answer. But John accepts that readily, inclining his head and letting Jango pull him towards the ship without protest. "It seems," he says quietly, "like Boba might have the right idea about Concord Dawn. There's space there, and it's your homeworld." He pauses, weighing his words, weighing whether he has the right to say it, and then offers, "And the true Mandalorian's bases are still there." Jango's hand tightens around John's, though he doesn't look back at him. "The true Mandalorians were all killed," he says roughly, "by Dooku and by the Death Watch." "All?" John asks, soft enough that Jango can ignore it if he wants to. Jango doesn't, though. He stops, turns to face John, and his face is unreadable. "Volunteering to join the ranks, Jedi?" he asks, and it's meant to be a taunt. But the words crack across old, deep-seated grief, slide into something desperate instead. John steps close, hands sliding up Jango's arms. He curls his fingers around Jango's biceps, leans in and kisses him, open-mouthed and impossibly light. "No," he says, gentle. "You don't need me for that." Jango's breath shudders out of him, and he drops their foreheads together, just leaning there. "Grieving," John thinks, and doesn't have an answer, doesn't have a cure. He just stands there, holding Jango steady, holding him up as he wrestles with his own choices, his own actions. "It's all right," he says, and tangles their fingers. "Everything can be repaired with enough work." "Kirking jetty," Jango mutters, but there's no heat to it, just fondness. He kisses John again, breathes out, and opens his eyes. "Dooku first," he says roughly. "I want his head, and then Concord Dawn and Kamino." John smiles, and he's still smiling when Jango kisses him again, slow and deliberate, not quite a thank you, but maybe something close. Feels Jango's hands sliding down his back with a purpose, and hums. From the swamp to their left, there's a roar that shakes the earth, and Jango wrenches their mouths apart with a sound of furious disbelief. "Criffing now?" he snarls, grabbing for his blaster as a fast-moving serpentine shape surges out of the deep water and right for them. "Boba! Boba, the ship's guns!" John grabs him out of the warworm's path, and space folds, fractures, reforms as they drop right onto the warworm's back. "I told you, and you still kissed me back," he says, drawing his lightsaber, and Jango snarls, both blasters out and already aiming. "You could have just asked me to fuck you again," he says, and John laughs, even as the Slave One's engines rumble to life, weapon systems coming online. He can see Han on the ramp, shouting something to Boba, and he lunges, knocking the worm's head away before it can snatch Jango off its back, and leaps, Jango firing even as John hauls him clear. It's not the worst ending to a mission John's ever had, at least. It might even be one of the best ones. The end. "That you never loved me, or her, or anyone, or anything, yeah. I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me, let out you be too late. Oh, If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from the podfic post, you can find a link to the text. Thanks for listening!